This episode is brought to you in part by the American Homebrewers Association, a community of more than 40,000 fermentation enthusiasts from around the world. Visit homebrewersassociation.org for recipes, brewing tips, and conversation. homebrewersassociation.org. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 16th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Steve Wilkes of stevesbrewshop.com and I practice social distancing as we sample the 16th hop sampler. This time, it's German Tettnanger, East Kent Golding, and German Hallertau Blanc. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. And if you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. And if you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing. And many thanks to everybody who's helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. And again, thanks to everybody who's hanging with us during these more than challenging times. And I hope that you and yours are doing well and hanging in there. And I hope that we are over this hump soon, sooner than later, when it's safe. This past Friday, I kegged my brown ale based on the recipe from Stephen in Rhode Island. I think it's darn tasty. I think even Chris Colby would say that it was good. I posted a picture of it on Instagram, and a couple commented that it looked too dark to be a brown ale. Well, it didn't taste that dark. Thanks to the 4 ounces of Black Prinz that I added, it's dark without being, you know, a whole lot of roasty. It is really a very nice beer, so thanks to Stephen for the inspiration, and a video episode will eventually be coming down the line. Steve Wilkes and I are set to record a video episode this week on my Viking Pale Ale. And it's going to be an unconventional episode because we're going to try to record remotely. I have a plan on how to do it, so wish us luck. I think we can have some fun with it and make the best out of a less than ideal situation. Did I mention Viking? That's the new full-time yeast from our friends and sponsors at Imperial Organic Yeast. A44 Kvaiking is a blend of 3 Kvaik strains that can produce an insane amount of pineapple, guava, and other exotic tropical fruit aromas. The Kvaiking blend thrives in hot fermentations when big, complex ester profiles are desired. Imperial says you can use this blend for anything from new school hazy IPAs to traditional Norwegian farmhouse brews. Now, the pale ale that I brewed with Kvaiking is a Breeze Pale Ale and Cascade Smash Beer, and it wasn't fermented hot, but it sure is delicious. I have another package of Kvaiking on hand in the fridge that I want to save when the weather does get hot, and I can, like, you know, put it out on the porch in the hot temperature. But there's more fun news from Imperial Organic Yeast. A34 Julius. This new springtime seasonal offers a range of bright citrus and light apricot esters that can be amped up with some punchy Southern Hemisphere hops. Available now through the end of May, traditional IPAs are Julius's specialty. Orange, lemon, and light apricot-like esters come through with low to moderate hopping rates to make perfectly balanced beer. The high flocculation characteristics of the strain make it easy to work with and produce bright, crisp ales. Man, I'm getting thirsty. I'm very excited to try A34 Julius. No spoilers, but I really liked one of the hops in this week's show, and I'm planning to use it with this seasonal yeast from Imperial. Ask your local homebrew shop about Imperial Organic Yeast, the highest pitch rate of any liquid yeast at 200 billion cells. My stir plate is dusty because I don't make starters for moderate gravity 5-gallon batches anymore. We love Imperial Organic Yeast. Let's take a look into the mailbag. Morgan from Sweden has a rye-related mystery. Morgan says, I did my first all-grain brew about 10 years ago, but I've not brewed much with rye. My last brew, a stout, had a fair amount of rye in it with about 15% of the grain bill. For some reason, I had problems getting a good specific gravity reading using my refractometer, so I decided to use the hydrometer to check the number. To my surprise, the hydrometer would not give me a reading at all for this wort, as it was floating so high in the measuring cylinder that it was outside the scale, somewhere around 1.160. The original gravity estimate was 1057, so I feel pretty sure the hydrometer was simply not working this time. As far as I can tell, the hydrometer is otherwise working as it should. It gave a good 1.000 reading for pure water. Morgan says, I've Googled the interwebs, but failed to find others with the same issue, so I thought this might be a good question for that crazy guy who brews 100% rye beers. Who's he talking about? I don't know. Morgan says, do you have any input on this issue? Does the high viscosity wort affect hydrometers in some mysterious way? Well, that is a mystery to me, Morgan. I can't swear to it, but I believe on all my 100% rye beers, I've used a refractometer and not a hydrometer. I did some Googling myself, and I found a brewlosophy experiment called the Rye Effect, where two beers were compared by the author Matt Del Fiocco. I believe that's how you pronounce that's my stab at pronouncing your name, Matt. One with all pale malt and the other with 15% rye substituted. But Matt took the pre-fermentation gravity readings with a refractometer, not a hydrometer, and they were similar. So I don't know. Next time, assuming that you didn't make a mistake on your recipe there, Morgan, that would be a pretty dramatic mistake to go from, you know, projected original gravity estimate of 1057 to somewhere around 1.160. I don't know. Next time I brew a 100% rye beer, I'll have to compare a hydrometer reading to a refractometer reading and see if there's a difference. Listeners, do you have any experience with this or any theories? Drop me a line at james@basicbrewing.com to weigh in. Let's talk about our friends and sponsors, Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. A lot of folks are picking the home brewing hobby back up, apparently, after stepping away for a while, or they're increasing their volume of brewing because they're at home more these days. If you're in either one of those categories, check out the Build Your Own Beer page at highgravitybrew.com. On one single very long page, you can see ingredients from a very well-stocked homebrew store. Desiree and Dave and the rest of the High Gravity family have a wide range of everything you'll need to brew your next recipe. It really is impressive to see all that stuff in one place. And as you add ingredients to your cart, the total is always visible at the bottom of the window so you can, you know, keep track of where you're going cost-wise. If you don't feel confident in formulating your own recipe, of course, check out the delicious recipe ingredient kits at highgravitybrew.com that are already put together there for you. Many of the recipes are favorites from Pippin's Tap Room at High Gravity, so they're well tested. And of course, if you want to step up your brewing rig to a spiffy electric system, and you have the resources to do so nowadays, highgravitybrew.com has the Warthog series of controllers and turnkey systems along with other manufacturers too. From 5 gallons all the way up to 2 barrels, highgravitybrew.com can help you take the pain out of propane with an electric setup. And if you use the code EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric gear purchase. Check it all out now at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. It's hard to believe that it's already the 16th hop sampler. That means Steve and I have sampled 48 hops. Well, actually 47 because we did lemon drop twice. But, you know, who's counting? Well, I guess me. This is a first. It's the first time that Steve and I weren't able to do the sampler face-to-face because we were being, you know, nice and responsible and practicing social distancing. Steve Wilkes, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks, James.
This is we are hoppy at a distance. Instead of spooky at a distance, we're we're hoppy at a distance. We're socially distancing.
Yeah. Yes, we are. I'm at the store, stevesbrewshop.com.
And I'm in studio whatever you call this studio, the original studio. So you've just shut the door or locked it for good, I guess, for the day. And how's business nowadays at stevesbrewshop.com?
It's blowing up. It's actually been pretty interesting. The homebrewing is blowing up all over the world, I think. And I'm getting my fair share of that business, which I'm thankful for. It's been really interesting. When the virus first hit our shores and people first got spooked, business went in the toilet. I mean, in the toilet. There wasn't any business to be had for about 2 weeks, maybe two and a half. And I thought, oh, Lord, what am I going to do? I'm going to be finished up here in about a month if we go under. And then all of a sudden, it just blew open. And I was so busy, I haven't been able to breathe for about a month, it seems like. And so it's starting to taper off. It's starting to kind of come back to earth a little bit. I think, I don't want to say people are panic brewing. I won't go quite that far. But definitely people are stocking up. So where someone might buy, enough ingredients to brew a beer or two, they're buying enough to brew three or four or five beers. Mm. That's what I'm seeing. And then personally, I'm seeing business from online business from around the country from folks who I haven't who are new customers to me. And I welcome them and I'm glad that I could help them. And I think that some of that's just because their local source, their local store, either maybe they had to shut down or whatever it is. I don't really know anyone's particular circumstance, but I know that some stores have had to close because their city or their state has instructed them to do so, or perhaps something in their personal lives, unfortunately, might have forced them to close, which could happen to any of us. But we've been fortunate, and I've been able to keep my store open and so far keep up with demand and keep everybody brewing who wants to, and I'm glad that I could do that. And we just have to kind of play it a day at a time. And so far, everybody's been really helpful and understanding, working with me, to find the ingredients that will work for everybody. It's getting harder and harder to get the exact ingredients sometimes. And so it's a really interesting time to be in any business. But I'm glad that we can help everybody and do it in a safe way.
So what precautions have you been taking there at the shop?
Well, it's been kind of progressive, just like everybody else has done, I think. We started off with just kind of a little 6 foot apart social distancing, and then we went to being really careful about sanitizing everything. And yay, homebrewers, we know how to sanitize, so that's not really an issue. but just in the last few days, I've really gone to curbside service only. So I'm the only person that comes in the store. Even my family doesn't come in the store anymore. I'm the only one that comes in, and I keep the place sanitary in terms of, everything still gets treated with Lysol and Clorox wipes, and we mop the floors. I mop the floors. I'm kind of one-man band. So everything gets sanitized regularly and thoroughly. And then when I package things up, they get a little squirt of Lysol as they go out the door. So we do that. And then that's for my online customers. But then for my local customers, it's curbside service. And so I'm just encouraging everyone to order online or to call. And I get the order ready for them. And basically, we just have an exchange at the door, at the threshold of the door. If we've both got on masks and then, it's a little bit more intimate. If not, then I kind of set stuff down and get out of the way and let them pick it up. And we find a way to exchange money, either by just passing the card back and forth or maybe getting them to pay online. Just trying to minimize contact as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And that's just a safety precaution for everybody, you just have to kind of assume that everybody has cooties, including you,
yeah.
including me.
Yeah.
And if you go look at it like that, then it's not, there's nothing, you know, at first it was weird. At first it felt really personal, like, oh, you think I got cooties, but you just have to take it that way. And that way, you know, you can be sure that everybody is safe, at least to the extent that you can do it. And if I ever felt like I couldn't do that, then we'd just shut down.
Yeah.
That's just how we do it. So.
Well, let's hope that everything keeps going well for you and that everybody continues to be safe. And, literally nowadays you cannot be too careful. It's just a fact of life. And hopefully we'll get back to it sooner than later, but we just have to kind of deal with it.
Yep. Yep. It's just the new reality. And hopefully it'll go away soon, but it's going to take a lot of effort and a lot of patience, mm-hmm. and a lot of good cheer. At first it was one of those things where nobody knew if it was real or not for a few days. And then everybody kind of knew it was real, but nobody knew what to do about it. And now I think we've kind of gotten into a groove. I noticed that at least in the store and just in my personal life, just in general, there's just kind of a routine that you get into, and it doesn't feel odd anymore. It seems like you kind of realize how to get through your life and just take these little extra steps that frankly can save your life, because mm-hmm. you just don't know.
Or save the life of somebody else.
So, well, exactly. Yeah. That's right.
Okay, well, on to, as I say every week now, I say on to happier things.
Yeah, no kidding.
But, you know, we got to talk about this stuff because it's happening. So, all right, let's have some fun, shall we, Steve?
Let's do.
This is our 16th hop sampler.
Sweet 16.
Just don't sing that Ringo Starr song, because it's not, it's been canceled.
I've got Molly Ringwald out here, though. She's going to be on. 16 candles. It's her birthday.
That's right. And that's not a brew bag that she's got in her hand. No, never mind. Okay. We chose three hops, and at least two of them were hops that it was like, we haven't done these already, but we looked at the list and we haven't done these. Tettnanger, East Kent Golding, mm-hmm. and Hallertau Blanc. So yeah. So two out of the three, have been around for a long time, but maybe Hallertau Blanc is a newer one. We'll see when we read the descriptors. But when you pick these hops, or when we pick these hops, what did you expect out of this trio?
I expect them to be floral and relatively soft, not so much in your face. In other words, I kind of expect them to be, well, they're old world hops, and so I expect them to be, you know, just really soft and easy and herbal, I guess. That's what I expected.
Mm-hmm. And we've been tasting, we poured these out ahead of time. We've been tasting them, but I have to go through the thing that I could probably pre-record by now. But this is the hop sampler where I brew three small batches of beer with extract. And then we use a single hop in each of the beverages. I start with 3 quarts of water, or around 3 liters, and I add 450 grams or 1 pound of Pilsen Light dry extract into that 3 quarts. I bring it up to just up to boiling, and then I add the hops, and then I take it off the fire and let the hops stand in that hot wort for 10 minutes. And then I chill it down in an ice bath. It takes about 12 minutes to do that. And then I add 3 grams of USO5 into the fermenter with the wort, of course. And then I bottle with one of those carbonation drops in each of the bottles. I get a 6-pack out of each of these batches. When it comes time to sample, this time I had Susan help out. So what we've got here is we got two hopefully identical sets of bottles with masking tape over the or not masking tape, but duct tape over the bottle caps, and they're labeled 1, 2, and 3. So hopefully, if she did everything right, and I think she did, we should each have the same beers labeled 1, 2, 3 in front of us. Now we're just doing audio here. We're not doing video, so either one of us could cheat at any time.
That's true. But, found me out.
But I think at the end of it, you'll probably see that because we won't get them right, so you know that we didn't cheat. So I made a discovery with this batch. I've been having trouble with head retention on these small batches, and it's just been driving me crazy. And so finally, I thought, I've been sanitizing these bottles for the small batches in the dishwasher, as I usually have done, ever since years and years, I've been sanitizing bottles with heat, the heated drying cycle, in the dishwasher using no soap, but just run it through, regular wash cycle and then a heated drying cycle. And those bottles, can get up to like 170 degrees Fahrenheit. And so using heat, I sanitize the bottles. Well, this batch, instead of using the dishwasher, I used Starsan to sanitize the bottles. And the head retention is back. These look completely normal. So my theory is that a while back, we switched from the regular Cascade powder dishwashing soap to these little pods. And I think, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that there's some kind of residue or something in those little pods. Maybe there's a rinse-aid in there. I don't know.
But I'm sure there is.
But, maybe that stuff gets up in the bottles and, destroys the ability for the head to stick around. But these look normal, so I'm not going to use maybe there's some residue in the dishwasher, even with no soap added at the front of the cycle, so I'm not going to use the dishwasher anymore to sanitize these small batches. And the big batches I keg anyway, so it doesn't matter. So anyway, that's just a side note that if you've been having trouble with head retention and you sanitize your bottles in the dishwasher and you use those little pods, maybe you should try a different approach. News you can use here on the Hop Sampler.
That's right.
So the practice is that we go through and we taste each of these beers and we talk about what we taste, what we sense, and then we read a randomly chosen descriptor. These come from hopslist.com. And then we go to the next one. So we figure out at the end of it, we try to figure out which one is which. So since this is the 16th one of these we've done, maybe people have heard it before. But maybe not. You never know. Somebody might be, at home with nothing to do, and found us on the podcast thingy. So anyway, beer number one, Steve, what do you think?
Well, I first of all, I want to say that all three of them, I think, taste really good to me. So that's just throw that out there. Beer number one, the first thing I wrote down was Soft Spice. Hmm. Now, she was just in front of Baby Spice. okay, I'll leave that alone. And so Soft Spice and Floral. That was my first take.
They were on the road together.
On that beer. That's right. They were.
Soft Spice and Floral.
Yes, they had an act. They played Will and Poughkeepsie. It's very drinkable.
Oh, yeah.
All three of these beers are really, really pretty dang crushable, if you ask me.
And we have to be careful because we usually drink half of this much, because we split these. So I'm at home. I could drink all I want, but, you got to be careful. But you've got some more work to do. You got some orders to pack. So
yes, I do. And they'll be interesting when they get them. Oh,
just ignore that empty plastic cup in your box.
That's right.
So that's where that went.
Okay. Mm. So number one, just Soft Spice, Floral. you know, it's a nice Pils.
It's a little hoppier than a regular Pilsner, but that's not a bad thing.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Give you that. Yeah, I'll give you that.
I'm thinking of a slightly peachy. That's what came to my mind when I was tasting these before. I said, you know, I want to choose an adjective that characterizes each one of these, and I think slightly. I get the spice,
yeah,
but I think it's slightly peachy. And you know these 10-minute hop stands.
Yeah.
They really encourage the fruit flavors to come out in, you know, just about every hop that we have tried. But yeah, slightly peachy. I get you a little bit of spice in there, as with soft spice, but it's just kind of.
I do. You have suggested that to me. I guess I'll put it that way. I see what you mean. The flavor that got to me first was at the back end, at the very end of the taste. That's where I pick up that kind of peppery note and that little bit of spice note. But you're right, it's very luscious, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's very good.
Yeah.
So do you want to? Are you in a position where you can read the first descriptor?
Well, if my eyes will work. I mean, I'm upright.
So far.
So far. Let's see what we can do here. Bear with me. This is like a four-point type. Selected from an old German land race, Techning is grown the world over. Swiss, U.S., and Australian varieties can be found on the market today. See, this is where the punctuation's getting me. On the market today, though some foreign versions labeled Tettnanger, this with quotes around it, are actually hybridized mixes with Fuggel, and not considered a true Tettnang hop. Tettnang is grown around its native village of Tettnang in southwest Germany and in small quantities near Lake Constance in Switzerland. Though characteristically similar to Hallertauer and genetically similar to Sots, Tettnang has notably more, Farnese, F-A-R-N-E-S.
I'd say Farnesene.
Farnesene, thank you. Content, Faversham, giving it a soft spiciness and a subtle balanced floral and herbal aroma. It is also great as a dual-use hop and considered many as being particularly well-suited to European lagers and pilsners.
Now, this Tettnanger came from your shop, and it's German Tettnanger, right?
Yes, it's true Tettnang, yes.
So that's not saying that this first beer was that. We're just saying that is the randomly selected, although if my record is any indication, I'll just pair that one with, I'll just say each one is.
the one that was just described.
Yeah, yes, it just goes down the line. Okay, beer number one, tasty. I can't let it be. Okay, beer number two.
Okay.
I'll go first on this one. The adjective that I thought of earlier . The bitterness is a little more pronounced, but the adjective I came up with earlier was fruit stripe gum.
Yeah. I agree with that completely. I was thinking of – I didn't think of fruit stripe gum. I thought of juicy fruit gum. But I think fruit stripe's even closer, as I recall, fruit stripe gum, because I used to eat that stuff or chew it. I thought luscious, and I got bright, and I also get a little grassiness on this one. I think it's got – just at the end, it's kind of a little bit of a grassiness to the beer that I don't get in the other two.
It does have a more raw – hop character, along with the fruit stripe gumminess. Oh, I forgot to say the amount of hops that I used in each of those. It was 28 grams or a full ounce of the Tettnanger at 3.1% alpha acid, then 16.5 grams of EKG at 5.3% alpha acid and 9.5 grams of the German Hallertauer Blanc. And I forgot to write down the alpha acid of that one, but it was higher than 5.3.
Yeah, I think it's about 9.
Okay. I forgot to write that down.
Pretty sure. Yeah.
So it was a full ounce of tetanine, which is 28 grams, 16.5 of EKG, and 9.5 grams of the German Hallertauer Blanc. Mm-hmm. So this one, okay, yeah, it has a more raw hop character. You say grassy. It has a fruit gum kind of character.
It's not as complex as I think of when I think of like Mosaic. Mm. But it reminds me of that. It's that same kind of flavor complexity, you know, that multiple flavors that you get.
Mm-hmm. It's good though. It's more.
Yeah,
I think
it's really good.
I think it's more complex than number one. Number one is very sort of subtly fruity, but very drinkable. Hmm. Boy, maybe loopy by the end of this thing.
Hang on, loopy.
That's sloopy.
Oh yeah, sloopy. Sorry.
All right. Can you read the descriptor for East Kent Golding? And if you want to get people mad, say East Kent Goldings with an S.
I won't do that because I don't want my shop to get keyed. If you ever seen a building get keyed, it's rough. East Kent Golding. East Kent Golding is often thought of as the ultimate English hop. Grown exclusively in Kent, England. Kent, period. England and descent. What?
That's a comma.
Sorry. That's a comma. In Kent, England, and descended from Canterbury Whitbine. They probably say Whitbine, though. It is a centuries old variety. Despite claims to the contrary, it is identical to Canterbury Golding. The two names have been used interchangeably for some time. Canterbury is a town in East Kent, and the hop was first brought to market there in 1790.
Mm.
Wow. Some, however, charge to this day that East Kent Golding and Canterbury Golding are two distinct varieties, though there is no clear evidence to support this. The variety began to be known primarily as East Kent Golding in 1838.
Whoa.
It has a good yield in England, but has shown to have an even better yield in Oregon after its introduction there in 1994. It has an amazing aroma profile with lavender, spice, honey, and notes of thyme.
Hmm.
Flavor-wise, it is earthy and mildly bittering with a sweet, silky, honey-like character. East Kent Golding is considered to be the quintessential English hop, long held as one of the island's favorites for ales and pale ales. Ales and pale ales.
There was some editorializing in that descriptor.
No kidding.
From hopslist.com.
I'm telling you.
So if you buy Golding that's grown in Oregon, they can't call it East Kent Golding, can they?
Well, I wouldn't think so. They just have to call it Sparkling Golding.
or a Golding.
Or Golding. I don't really know, but you're right. That was pretty much just an op-ed.
Under the fairness doctrine, we will be accepting rebuttals next week.
That's today. Right. Yeah. Jane, you ignorant slut.
That's what I felt like saying, after Colby was going on and on about how he hated brown ales for so long. we need Dan Aykroyd here.
Need a rebuttal. Well, I do like East Kent Golding, however. It's a very nice hop. And one of these three beers is made from it. And they're all good. So
I took another sip of number two. And the fruitiness kind of lingers on that one. It's nice, though.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
Beer number three.
Beer number three. Phew. These are warming. I'm starting to feel like Jonathan Winters. Well, that's good.
Mm.
Okay.
Now, the third one, the hop character is even more pretty. The bitterness to me, this is the most bitter of the three. Do you think?
Okay.
Or maybe not.
I don't know.
See, we're not here to pass notes to each other. We're not in person. We can't do hand signals.
Body language.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no body language. There's no, like, bitter beer face or anything like that. Let me get back to you on that bittering thing.
Mm. Let me go through this flight again and see.
Yeah, it's more bitter than number two, to be sure. Yeah, you're right. It is. It does have the strongest bittering of the three. Yeah, for sure. And it's kind of the most upright. Now, I know that's not really a term you hear with beer very often, but it's kind of...
Especially after you've had a few.
That's right. In other words, the flavor doesn't slide into you. It's just like, boom, this is the flavor. It's just very straight ahead and very pronounced. Now, it's not strong. It's not a big IPA or anything like that, but it's not fruity. It's not bubblegummy. It's traditional. It tastes like I recall beers of my youth tasting.
Yeah, it's more of a clean bitterness.
I wouldn't pass this. Yeah, it's real clean.
Earlier in the tasting, when it was a little bit colder, I swear I was tasting more of a mango kind of a thing, but that has gone away.
Nah. Mm. This is just straight ahead beer.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Oh, that's good. I really like it.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah, compared to the other two beers compared to that. Are a lot more fruity.
They're much more fruity, and they're just a little bit more. They're softer.
Mm-hmm.
They're more complex. I like them very much. I'm not sure that I don't like the third one the best, though.
Yeah, it's more kind of a, like you said, just kind of a straight up beer. Just like here's a nice. It's more bitter than a traditional Pilsner, in my opinion.
I just find it to be very refreshing.
Mm-hmm. It's still a pale ale, in my opinion, but it's just a nice, solid pale ale.
Yeah, and I just find that the other two beers leave my palate. I kind of want a little drink of water to almost – I kind of want to clean my palate a little bit. This one does that, though. This one's more refreshing of the most refreshing of the three beers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. You want to hear what number three is?
I do.
Okay. Then I shan't hesitate. Hollaterra Blanc, daughter of Cascade.
I thought it was the daughter of Mel Blanc.
That's right.
Suffering succotash.
That's right.
Sorry.
Oh, Lord. Hollaterra Blanc.
Start again.
Start again. I shan't hesitate. Hollaterra Blanc. Hollaterra Blanc, daughter of Cascade, was released to the world in 2012. Established on the Hull Farm, or Huel Farm, in the German Hollaterra region, it was grown primarily for use in American-style ales. Hollaterra Blanc's flavor profile is said to be fruity, with wine-like qualities of gooseberry and grass, similar to that of Sauvignon Blanc. It also features a complex aroma profile with notes of cassis and elderflower, in addition to grapes, grapefruit, and lemongrass. Other notes detected in trials have been passion fruit, pineapple, and gooseberry.
Hmm. Or gooseberry.
Gooseberry.
Gooseberry RFD. Huh. Wow. Daughter of Cascade.
Yeah. Who's a daddy?
Who's your daddy, Olatar Blanc?
he done got up and left. he done got the Cadillac and just left. Moved on to Memphis. Now he's singing in a country bar.
He let the house go back. Now
let the house go back. Okay.
Mm. Mm. Oh my. Now there's our beers, or there's our descriptors. We tasted our beers. I'm going to go through again and have some swigs. And if you hear a sound like tape being peeled off of a bottle cap, just ignore that.
I'm not cheating.
I'm not either.
Well, I like all three beers quite well.
Mm.
I do have a favorite, which I think you know which one it is.
Mm-hmm.
But
ooh.
I like all three of them.
Wow. Ooh, boy. Number one is now, it's almost at room temperature and super fruity.
Yeah.
The fruitiness has really come out on this one. Mm.
Mm. I like that. I'm actually liking it better now. I mean, more. I still like it fine to begin with, but I really like it.
Number two, that descriptor, honey-like character, really strikes a note with me.
Mm-hmm.
Number two. I think I have my suspicions.
Well, I've got my suspicions.
What do you think on number one?
I think number one's EKG.
Oh. Hmm.
Do you think number one was Tettnanger?
No, I think number one is Hallertauer Blanc.
Oh my! Oh my gosh!
Yeah, because it's like grapes and grapefruit and all those fruity.
Oh, that's.
And the gooseberry and all that. I think number one is Hallertauer Blanc. I think number two is EKG. And I think number one is Tettnang.
Wow.
What do you think? What do you think on two and three? What do you think?
Well, I got number one is EKG. Number two is Hallertauer Blanc. And number three is Tettnang.
Hmm.
That's so we don't agree at all, do we?
Well, Tettnang, we both think number three is Tettnang.
Oh, we both think number three is Tettnang? Okay.
So should we open that first? Okay, let's peel off the thingy.
Yeah, I've lost my bottle cap, so you have to be there. Oh, I threw my bottle caps away.
Well, they still have the tape on them, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, here they are.
Okay, I unpeeled mine.
Okay, number one.
Or do three first, since we agree on that. It's Tettnang. See if yours agrees with what mine says.
Okay. Number three, mine says EKG.
Yeah, mine does too. Darn it.
Okay. Well, it shows you what I know. But I like the EKG the best, so I learned something, right?
Yeah.
That's how you have to look at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was afraid that since it was the most bitter, I was afraid kind of that it would be Tettnanger and that, you know, it had gotten the full ounce of hops. And so I thought, well, you know. But that was only one part of my consideration. Huh. So what's number one?
Okay.
Let's do number one.
I've got number one in my hand. And I've got number one's Hallertauer Blanc.
Yep, that's what I got. Yep.
I didn't get any of them right.
Well, I got one.
Wow.
Yeah, Hallertauer Blanc to me was just the most fruity.
Okay.
And then, let's see, make sure number two. Yeah, number two is Tettnanger. Huh.
Wow. Okay. Well, I swear that I thought I could have sworn number two was Hallertauer Blanc. I would have bet the farm on that. I didn't. I'll be darned. Well, I really liked. Well, okay, so then I can. Then what I. So what I have learned, at least if I'm doing a smash beer like this, EKG was my favorite. The Haltar Blanc was my second favorite beer, and the Tetning was my third favorite beer. But that's one variable. You can't. You wouldn't brew a beer like I wouldn't avoid Tetning, of course.
Right.
But just for this very limited moment, that's the order. That's my rank. That's how I would. Gold, silver, and bronze. That's how I would do them.
And, you know, I doubt there are many beers in the world that have been brewed with all of, you know, all the hops being Tetnang added at just a 10-minute hop stand.
Exactly. Yeah.
One of these days, what we're going to have to do is do like a full, you know, like 60-minute boil between three radically different hops with the same, you know, IBU potential or whatever, and just see if we can tell the difference between those three.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
That would be that'd be interesting. Yet another thing to put on the list of things to do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm not sure which one my favorite is. I like the super fruitiness of the Haltar Blanc. It's really fun. Mm. And would be really good in a New England IPA, just like a hazy New England IPA. It just jumps out there and is just really fun and fruity, and it would be delicious out on the patio, you know, on a sunny day in the summer.
Well, to tell you the truth, I only started carrying these because a customer recommended them. I wasn't familiar with the hop, and I've always carried Haltar Mitfruit, the original Haltar. And then I began carrying Haltar Tradition, I don't know, about six, 8 months ago, maybe a year ago, just because. I mean, it was nice to have one that had a higher alpha acid for a little bit of variety in that family. But a customer who's become a friend suggested Haltar Blanc because of that bright, fruity flavor. And so I got some in, and man, it's great. And it was exactly what he was doing, New England IPA, and that's what he wanted to do with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my big learning there. I think that I really like that character, that fruity character. Maybe that'll be my next, full-size beer. We got that. What's the new seasonal from Imperial that's coming on?
Oh, Julius.
Oh, Julius.
Oh, Julius. You tiger, you.
That's our Charles Nelson Reilly impressions.
Yeah, that's right.
I've been watching too much Match Game lately.
Yeah.
But is Julius, would it be a good hop, juicy hop?
Yeah, I think so. It'd be very, very good. It's an IPA, you know, a summery citrus, you know, really play up the big citrus notes in hops. And at least that's what the literature says. And I've got a bunch of it on the way, so we'll get to play with it.
Maybe like a late hop cream ale.
Oh, yeah.
Mmm. Okay, that's my next. I'll make my shopping list, and I'll just look for my order to ping on your website and, tell me when it's safe to come by, and then I'll put my mask on, and we can meet at the door.
Yep. That's right. Let's hope my cousin – well, I'm going to go in there. a little bit to drink.
Take a break before you drive home.
That's right. Maybe fill some orders. Or not.
Is that what the kids are calling it nowadays?
That's right. Well, I'll tell you, this has been one of the most illustrative versions of this show we've done, episodes we've done. I've really learned a lot tonight. The EKG is my favorite, and I really, really like that beer, and it makes me now want to go back and explore some traditional British beers.
Yeah.
Because I like those anyway, and I like to brew those, and I like to drink them, and that makes sense with the one that I picked as my favorite beer.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, all right, Steve. Hang in there. Be safe.
Thank you, James.
Be well.
Yep. All that and above.
And we'll see you soon, briefly. Thanks again to Steve of stevesbrewshop.com. I have a malt sampler in the bottle that I'm looking forward to, and I'll bring that Steve's samples to him next time I head to town and visit him at the shop briefly. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to James at basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be safe, everybody. Check our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. So until next time, until then, everybody, be careful out there. Keep yourself safe. Thanks for listening. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dodson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.